Jeff Esdale, Senior Creative Writer for Hit 105 and Triple M, that's Southern Cross Austereo in Brisbane. Thanks for taking some time out to talk voiceover casting today.
Pleasure, Andy. It's my pleasure. It's a weird subject, isn't it? And happy to chat about it and happy to share what I know.
Excellent. Plenty of experience there too, because you've been in your current role with Southern Cross Austereo stations for 22 years. I bet you've cast quite a few voices in that time.
Yeah, I have. And I'm always either looking for new ones or listening to old ones or trying to find something that will suit what I've written.
How has the voiceover landscape changed over the past couple of decades then? You're saying you're always looking out for new voices. What's changed?
Wow. I tell you what, when I talk to people who want to get into voices, that's one of the first things we talk about, how it's changed. And, you know, any Radiohead or any voiceover fanatic who has listened to voices for so long will tell you there has been a tremendous change in the style of voices, in what ads want, you know, what commercials require, and also what people want to listen to. And to get down to the tin tacks of that, you know, we all have heard those big, and for want of a better term, big ballsy voices of the late 70s and early 80s.
Yeah.
They seem to have ruled the roost for so long. You know, those big, predominantly male voices, but big male radio voices that these guys, I don't know where they come from the gods. They seem to rule the radio, at least in my context, in reading radio commercials. And now, to leap forward to today, now you are getting far more conversational voices. Less announcer, more conversation. And people want to hear, well, you know, everyday people talking to them rather than talking at them with some booming voice of God style delivery. I think I've sort of summed up the last 30 years there, but that's the sort of change you're probably referring to.
And I think you kind of touched on what was driving that change. Does it all come back to the advertisers and their brands, do you think?
Yes, partly it does. Partly because you will see business owners, and I still get that today, business owners who still want someone that sounds like John Laws.
Yeah.
Business owners that still want a blokey male voice. But you're talking about other influences. I think that change comes from a few other places as well.
Yeah.
I think it comes from people on radio. Gone are the days of those radio jocks. Now we're moving into more twosomes and threesomes and teams and crews and zany zoos and, you know, and the grill teams, where you have different types of voices on the radio. So you've got different crews of people. So that's one influence. I think also what we're listening to, and I refer to, say, podcasts here,
yes,
where people are hearing normal people talk about chosen subjects. And I think also just subjects require different voices to talk about those subjects in a commercial sense. And I'm talking about everything from plastic surgery. I'm talking about legal compensation, talking about both male and female categories on radio that no longer need or no longer is appropriate that big booming voice that coming out to discuss that subject. Am I making sense to you? Yeah, those are sort of influences I see. And you know what? The other influence, I just thought of it.
Yeah.
Sometimes it just takes a crazy ad, some sort of different ad. So, wow, I want to use that guy. Some sort of watershed moment in advertising where all of a sudden some other style comes bubbling up to the surface.
You know, I can think of a great example of that is the iiNet ads with the Irish sounding guy.
Yeah, and that's so true, where you get all of a sudden some sort of circuit breaker where an advertising agency, a radio station, or someone in the like pop culture arena who has a big presence, like, hey, this is our voice. And that probably dovetails, I don't know if you want to get to the subject so soon, but a lot of people say, hey, I'm Irish or I'm English or I'm French or I'm a New Zealander. Is that going to limit me from doing voiceovers? And I say it shouldn't. It shouldn't limit you. You've just got to choose the scripts, choose the work that's appropriate
yes.
to you. And so you can, people say, hey, sure, that's a great voice, but what he's talking about is really, really appropriate too.
Let me put some of these trends to the test. I put you on the spot here. Tell me about the last few scripts that you cast voices for. What sort of voices have you been casting?
Recently, I've been working on something for fireplaces, Brisbane fireplace and heating. As we get into winter, this subject obviously has bubbled to the surface.
Yeah.
So people are thinking of warm and cozy, conversation place in their home, or a romantic place in their home, or a place that might lead you to stare off into the distance and dream about stuff. So I've been thinking about warm, inviting voices, and I've cast someone called Natasha Beaumont. Natasha is a wonderful Australian actress, and her tone in her voice is very warm and very soothing. I've also been doing something for a company about personal loans. And this company wanted to reassure people that, hey, don't worry, we don't have to have a long story about why you want the money. You can get the money pretty quickly these days. So I was looking for someone that almost, as I like to refer to it, has stumbling sincerity. You know, it's normal, and you can hear the fault in their voice. You know, I just want the money for this.
Right.
You know, it's okay to be riddled with mistakes and to be very human. So Natasha's warm and caring, professional, smooth tones, someone who is stumbling and accidental and human foibles, and hey, I would just want this this product. And also, I also do a lot of compensation lawyers as well.
Right.
And compensation lawyers is another big category that's come up where people are injured at work.
Yes.
Who do not know the law and need professional advice. So once again, you might have a guy who is injured at work, or a woman who may be a professional working woman, professional man, factory floor person, who, in a broad spectrum, who once again is unsure. That's the word I'm looking for, who may be unsure of what to do, but they need information. And, you know, I often think to myself, what am I really selling? What is this voice supposed to be really conveying to me? And sometimes it's warmth. Sometimes it's, oh, gee, this is a big subject. I just don't understand it. And sometimes it's just Aussie honesty. More and more these days, real people who can express an idea well doesn't have to be those big booming voices of the 80s anymore. But if it's well written, you can be well cast. I often say you don't have to be perfect, but you just have to be perfect for the job. You don't have to be perfect. You don't have to be that English, Shakespearean, booming, articulated, enunciated voice. You just have to be perfect for, you know, I'm the that person. I'm the this person.
Well, if you're not looking for the perfectly rounded voice, where are you generally casting your voice talent from? I mean, you've described a couple of different categories there. Where are you getting them from up in Brisbane?
Okay, so look, I think for myself, and I'm probably speaking for the routine that a lot of writers do, we write ads and then we go to a couple of sources. One are the large voiceover agencies, RMK, EM Voices, Sophie German, Scout Management, some local agencies here in Brisbane, Kubler Auckland Management, Brisvo, and every capital city will have their local agencies or their national. So that's my first port of call. I go there and have a listen to. Secondly, I would go to my private stash. And what I mean by that is those people who I know and I trust and I've worked with before to say, hey, can you do this? So be it the well-known national agency, the local state agency, or local people that I know I've worked with before. And then there's some people who I've just heard of. Like I got a really nice demo tape. I shouldn't use the word tape, but, you know, a nice contact from someone recently, and I gave her a go, and you know, it's worked out well. So those the sort that's the sort of routine. I write, I think, I cast, and And I get the best out of those people that I want to work with.
Now, Jeff, another shift in how voiceover is kind of working these days is where the voiceover talent are recording from.
Yeah.
There's a bit of a shift between traditionally you'd have someone come into your studio, you'd work with them one-on-one with an engineer, and you'd get everything just perfect. Now, I guess since the dawn of the internet, we've seen the rise of the home recording studio, which comes in many forms. What are you seeing happening in that space, and how does that affecting your work? And I guess lots of questions here. Can anyone just do that, record from their own home studio and expect to get work?
Well, first, Andy, let me agree with what your time chronology was. Mm. Yes, we used to get a lot of people in and work with them behind the glass and do that. Now the voiceover industry is fracturing, as I like to say. There are voices and writers and studios all over the place.
Yeah.
So technology, your second point, technology has allowed us to work and live and perform and read and record in various places. And yes, we are now moving on to those people who have home studios. And home studios, wow, they come in the good, the bad, and the ugly. meaning those people who have a laptop on the kitchen table and a microphone, and wow, does it sound like it?
Hmm.
And they call themselves voice talent with a home studio. And I'm always very cautious of just because you've got the technology and you can go and buy the technology, the end result is pretty poor. So on the other end of that home studio technology, there are people I know who have, you know, bought like a recording booth. I know one lady who's actually imported something from Spain, and it cost her around $6,000, and it arrived, IKEA style, and they built this thing, and it's fantastic. So you can plug in a USB mic, put a blanket over your head, and do it that way. And look, I'm not a technical person, but yeah, look, microphones have improved, all the way up to building your own home studio. And I got to say, the other day I heard of someone who went to Bunnings, bought themselves a bit of shelving racking, and they built themselves like some sort of framework around themselves, scaffolding around themselves, and stuffed it with a couple of mattresses. So it comes in different varieties. So anyway, to your other point, so that's where we are at the moment. Technology is moving voices along and allowing people to read, but with a word of caution.
Hmm.
Make sure that your technology is good. Make sure your booth is very good. Make sure that you can do what you can say you can do, the quality. And because the producers I work with think, oh, wow, I'm spending half an hour just cleaning up this guy or this girl, cleaning up mistakes or cleaning up the truck that drove past the kitchen window, you know, or that sort of thing. Yeah, that certainly has changed from in studio to home studios, but with a cautionary tale to make sure, yes, it's possible, just to make sure that everything you're using is good. And if you're not technical, make sure you get someone technical with you to test the line or test the microphone or test the quality of what you're sending, that it's all okay.
And would you recommend that before someone races out and starts building their own home voice booth, that perhaps they gain some experience where they are in front of someone who's directing them live in someone else's studio?
Yeah, precisely. For the very reason is that you can just love yourself if you're just standing there reading and thinking you've got a good voice. But what are you doing with it? You know, are you getting the most out of it? Is the timing and the breathing and what you're doing with your body and with your words correct? So sure, you need a director, and you need just before you leap in and think everything's sounding fantastic. But really, you might have the tone, but you're just not using it well, or you're not giving what that writer or producer wants at the other end. And you hear a lot of women, a lot of men with great voices, undeniably great voices.
Yeah.
But do they know what they're talking about? And what I mean by that is that, do you know what you've just read? Are you into what you're reading?
Mm.
Let me just, you know, underline this phrase. Can you go faster here but slower there? Can I give you some backstory to what you're reading before you get into it, rather than picking up a piece of script and just launching into it. I think that's the benefit of working with a director or having some experience before you start working by yourself, that you are constantly checking and rechecking and knowing exactly, you know, I want to improve. I'm just not Mr. Golden Voice or Mrs. Golden Voice. I've really got to be aware. I always say you reading radio commercials means you must know your voice and know what it can do, and also know what you're bad at and what you're good at.
Amazing. Now, Jeff, you're a wealth of knowledge, and I guess we can attribute some of that to the fact that you did run your own voice over coaching business in Brisbane for around 10 years.
Yeah.
Can I ask what sort of people were contacting you with that business, hoping to start on that pathway to becoming a voiceover artist?
All sorts of people. Nurses, truck drivers, accountants, some actors, some call center people, some old, some young, some employed, some not employed. All sorts of people, but they all had the commonality of somewhere, sometime, someone said to them, hey, you've got a nice voice, you should do something with that. And I often start by that very question. I would say, put your hands up if your Auntie Mary around the Christmas table said to you, hey, you've got a really nice voice, you should do something with that. And people say, yep, that's what's happened to me. So I'm investigating. And people do a course or are doing courses to say, what am I like? Is it worth pursuing? I've been told I got a good voice, but really what it's like. And that's why they come to me and they come to you and to see, okay, have I got what it takes? Is what I do what people want these days? And is it worth pursuing and perfecting?
Absolutely. Now, one thing I find is quite often people jump ahead in their expectations and they come in saying, gosh, I'd love to do voiceover work because I want to make some money out of it.
Yeah.
I think that's you know, looking quite forward into the future.
Yeah.
So what would be your number one tip for anyone thinking of getting into voiceover work? Because they've got to start somewhere to end up somewhere.
Yeah, they do. Look, the things I say is that getting into voiceovers, it is a long and laborious process. And also, you might find your best training not necessarily just doing voiceovers.
Mm.
So you should try to explore everything you can to use your voice in different fields and expose your voice to different arenas. Apart from voiceover work, try singing. Try stand-up comedy. Try enrolling in a Toastmasters or speech making rotary style thing. Get yourself involved in community radio stations, of which, you know, in Southeast Queensland, there's probably 20 or 30 of them.
Right.
And I suspect in Victoria, around Melbourne and around Sydney and around Adelaide, Perth, community radio stations do rely on a lot of volunteers to either read sponsorship messages or to be on air or create programs. So singing, acting, poetry, reading, community radio stations, reading out loud to children, performing, being a bit of a goose, you know, to kids, and reading and using your voice in your performance. And also there may be something right under people's noses they haven't thought about. There may be what I'm getting at there is there may be something where people work that requires someone's voice to read a hold message or a training, a workplace health and safety training video. And so they might be in their own work environment. Start telling people, hey, I'd like to do this. Can I do something for you? So those are the arenas that I would, amateur theatrics too. There's an awful lot of amateur theatre groups as well. That might scare people because I mentioned stand-up comedy, but that broad list of things, you don't have to take each one. But what I want to tell people is that it's going to be a long way before the phone rings and someone like me saying, hey, coming to read a 30-second ad. But you're going to have better luck doing those sorts of things, practicing with your voice, using your voice, getting to know what your voice can do, reading quickly, reading slowly, speaking to a group of people, holding their attention with pauses and with timing. Those sorts of things will get you to realize, hey, I'm pretty good at this, I'm horrible at that, or how my voice has changed by singing or poetry or other groups and societies like that.
Jeff, I ask you for your number one tip. I think you've given me 1 through 10. You are, as I said, a wealth of knowledge, some really valuable tips there for people starting out. Thanks again for your time today.
Absolute pleasure, Andy. Anytime. Thank you.